woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Well, North Bank Station Jacks. I've come out. I just met Robert Borbs, Jack Silverman, helping him out. We also have Miss Stephanie Koenig on Monday morning, as we like to have, usually do. Steph, how are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Hanging in there. As they say in the South Side, hanging upside down like a bat, you know, type of thing. SB Futures.
How was your fourth? Good long weekend.
It's okay. Down 7.25. Dow Futures down 73. NASDAQ Futures down 37. I cooked for Audrey and her real estate pals on 4th of July. It's always a good group. Independent thinking ladies, as you can probably imagine. And we went to Ogden Dunes on Saturday for a little party. Ogden Dunes, the beach community with no beach, Steph. Lake is too high.
Yes.
There are a lot of places that have... you love the lake. I'm not so sure you want it in your living room.
It seems to... What is the lake? Many feet above where it normally is.
Yeah, it's... I think it just reached the new record. The other... I'm not sure it has a whole month record yet, a monthly mean, but just below it. But Lake Erie, Ontario, and Lake Superior all have been at records. For those that don't know, Huron and Lake Michigan, since they're connected, are really the same water basin. And they have been slightly below record, but Lake St. Clair, like halfway between Ontario and Erie by Detroit there, that's been at a record for a while. So, yeah, it's a lot of water, and... When you look at the hydrologic survey stuff, you see that for the first time now they start rating the lake. And I don't know, I'm sure you have many friends that have yachts and have gone through the locks downtown a million times because, you know, you're very popular, you know, unlike me, just kind of hangs around the office. Remember where the lake was like a foot and a half higher than the river? Now it's like 4 feet higher than the river. So those are real locks now. The lake's like at the top of the lock. It's kind of strange, but
I keep waiting for us to lose more tourists because of, you know, waves sweeping them off.
Well, you literally cannot. I mean, I don't think you could use the lake all weekend, all around. I mean, you surely couldn't in Ogden Dunes. The Beverly Shores doesn't have any beach. Michigan City probably still has some, but I don't know how far out you want to go if there's rip currents, for God's sake.
Yeah, there's almost no beach in Michigan City.
No.
I think the lake's 10 feet higher there, something around there.
Yeah, it's, you don't like it really low, but you don't want it really high. You kind of like it right in the middle, but it's not there. But no, I went by the Des Plaines River's in flood again. I mean, or darn near flood. I mean, it's pretty bad. What, hey, Steph, all kinds of things going on in the world, that I've been, trying to keep track of this weekend. And, you know, one of the things. Okay, a load of this. I have been very seldom. I get a whole lot of pushback on some of the economic stuff that I say. I mean, I usually do not get too much. You know, always get some. But I'm getting all kinds of pushback on this. My iteration last week that you have when the gas tax goes up 19 cents, that the gas tax, the price of gas does not go up 19 cents. Unless you have a perfectly inelastic demand curve, which we don't have. It's fairly inelastic, but it's not perfect. I'm not going to go into all those definitions mean. But I was even getting grief from our buddy Billy, What do you mean? The price, when the tax on booze went up 30 cents a bottle, it took them a month, but it all went up 30 cents. I said, Billy, don't you understand? That's a monopolistic industry because every bottle of booze only has one distributor, and there's only like two distributors in the whole state. Didn't mean anything. So it's a duopoly. I mean, well, with a couple of, so it's a whole different program. I don't think anybody has any idea what the hell I'm talking about, Steph. So maybe I should just shut up about it. What do you think?
So I guess the question is rather than people understanding, what's your point about, gas prices are pretty elastic, right?
And well, so fairly, but not totally. Well, my point was is that when the state puts a tax on of 19 cents, so you essentially bump the supply curve up 19 cents across the line. But because the demand curve is not a straight line, somebody ends up eating a penny or two or three or four along the way, be it the gas station operator or the refiner or the person who sells the oil. Somebody eats a little bit if it's not totally inelastic. They're really, the prices are going to go up, let's say, in a fairly elastic curve, 14 cents. And maybe the gas station guy eats a penny and a half and the refiner eats a penny and a half. That all along the way, people are eating a little bit. It doesn't just jump 19 cents. Because oil is a very competitive market.
It is, yes.
And,
well, I think this is kind of like the question of, there's a lot of competition, so everyone tries to get it to jump exactly 19 cents.
Right.
But in order to remain competitive, some of them don't.
That's all I'm saying. And everybody along the line probably takes a little bit of a heat. It's the same argument you have on tariffs. You can't ever say we put a 20% tax on shot glasses. If it's the only person in the world that you can get shot glasses from, it's probably up 20%. But maybe
cars is a better example where a portion of the car is taxed, right? Let's say the engine is taxed 20% because it comes from China. Other parts aren't necessarily. The whole car price doesn't necessarily jump 20%.
Right. Well, that is actually a pretty good example, Steph, because if for instance, our president, who he could very well do, if he puts he gets pissed off at Toyota, and he puts a tariff on Toyotas. Okay, well, the Toyota dealer is still, his world is selling Toyotas that are competing with Chevy pickup trucks, Ford pickup trucks, Chevy Impalas, I mean, you name it. So he has to be, especially in the truck market, he has to be very competitive. So even though we might have put a tax on the pickup truck or the Corolla of $1,000, it doesn't mean that you or I going in there necessarily. I mean, we might have read that in a paper, but we don't care. All we know now is the Corolla is $1,000 more than the Impala. And we're going to say, screw you, I'm buying the Impala, right? Or what probably happens is Toyota says somewhere between them and the dealership, look, we don't care what the taxes are within reason. We're going to have to stay competitive with the Impala. Now, the Impala guy might say, whoa, those guys got $1,000 basically stick up there behind. I can raise the price of the Impala $300 and everybody's happy. Because now the Toyota guy says, I don't have to raise my price, not raise it at all. I can actually raise it $300, still be competitive, and only eat, $350 while the factory eats $350. My point is, it's very, very complicated. And the people who do it sort of need to know how complicated it is when they do it, or else they're going to get all these unintended consequences, which kind of leads me to a story I dug up last night, and how the tax on steel companies, or the tax on, or the tariff on steel, is is burying our steel companies, some of them here. Which is exactly what you would.
They've got to remain competitive, and a lot of the steel they do is for really big projects. So,
well, not so much that. It's the people here who have all of a sudden now our stuff is very competitive. Correct?
In theory, yeah.
But now we have two kinds of steel companies here. We have the Arch, the old blast furnace type, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got the electric arc. What is the electric arc? The electric arc essentially takes recycled steel, which they're getting better and better at, and totally competes with essentially new steel coming out of those things. So it says the what happened was the output went flying up. Okay, here I'm reading a Bloomberg article here by Matthew Townsend and Joe D-A-U-X, Joe Doe, Dax, I don't know, whatever that is. Anyway, Joe. A new course, cheaper to run electric arc furnaces hold their own. And they're saying here that President Trump's tariffs on foreign steel has sped the decline of some of the U.S. mills that he vowed to save. This here, so our guys started making more steel. They dropped the prices, and now the people with the old blast furnace ones. Remember the one in Illinois where he went down and the thing had been mothballed for a while, and they opened one up. And the things, they're not going to open up the second one. They might even shut down the first one. He went down there to see. Since Trump announced the tariffs 16 months ago, U.S. steel has lost almost 70% of its market value, $5.5 billion, and has idled two American furnaces in mid-June that couldn't be run profitably at the lowest price since 2016. Meanwhile, Nucor is pointing up $2.5 billion for expansion projects. I think when you do this stuff, you can't just go with your 71-year-old gut when you never read anything. I'm not, you know, I guess that's a shot fired, but you can't just do this stuff without trying to figure out what's going to happen, Steph. And, we just don't.
Without looking at the numbers and understanding the industry pretty well and understanding the impact of the decisions being made at the presidential level. Or country level, I guess, right?
Well, yeah. Here's one for you that I would really like you to comment on, because you still have your nose in the market because you love it, but have like regular jobs out in the rest of the world as a consultant. No, I didn't say insultant; I said consultant. You know,
I'm sure I can be an insultant too at times.
Now, what do you expound on this? If I'm Milton Friedman giving you a test. BlackRock sees economic outlook worsening for the second half, but stocks doing well anyway.
Well, I mean, I always have a theory about stocks around holiday times. So there's 4th of July, there's the last week basically in August, the first week in September, when the kids are still out of school in New York at least. A majority of the traders go away that last week. And then there's the Thanksgiving week, and then there's the Christmas week. So I have a theory about all these weeks, which is all the powerful people who make a lot of market decisions leave the industry, take off those times, and a lot of the junior folks are put in charge. And they're pretty much told, don't mess it up, don't make any big decisions, just kind of keep things going, right? So that's, I think, what's happened, in my opinion, in the last week is you've got the junior folks who've been sitting there. Yes, there are some major economic views, but no one's going to make any major decisions on changing portfolio positions until they get back. And you've also got the complementary aspect of that. You've got the average, you know, me, you, individuals who are home. I guess you and me probably don't consider a fitness carrier, but the average individual who has a stock portfolio, they're off for a week, which they don't usually have. They take some time to look at their stock portfolio and invest in those things that they've wanted to over time. So they drive the markets up slightly. So my general opinion about these time periods is there's not a lot that happens despite whatever economic factors are put out there, and the market usually goes up slightly for this time period. Now, everyone's back this week, and so we'll see how that gets readjusted.
What do you, I got to take a shot at you. How do you explain Christmas Eve?
Oh, this year?
Yeah.
Christmas Eve this year, I think, was definitely an anomaly from that general pattern, for sure.
I would agree with that. Why do you think? Is it one of the things I noticed on some of these days that you're right, the well, let's put it this way, the people involved, to the extent that there are people, are not as many on the holiday things, but when you make that kind of move, what were we down, like 300 and some points Christmas Eve, maybe even 400, and is it just a total lack of depth and liquidity in today's marketplace?
I think that's a big contributing factor. Also, I mean, a lot of people are just trying to make their year-end numbers, so there's a bit of fluctuation. usually in the November or December time period, and obviously maybe last year someone was trying to close out their year in the final minutes as best they could. You know, I don't know. Last year was kind of a huge anomaly.
Well, man,
there was a Trump factor.
Well, he was out tweeting Christmas Eve.
A whole bunch a couple of days before, and the market was really reacting to his tweets at that point. So there are a lot of different factors.
And it turned out to be one of the greatest buying opportunities in the last 50 years was Christmas Eve. And I don't know of anybody seeing that happen on Christmas Eve that would have been a buyer.
That's part of what I was very frustrated personally because, I was busy Christmas Eve, like many people, not watching the market, and then you kind of wake up Christmas Day and are like, oh, geez, I really missed an opportunity.
You know what, though, Steph, if you were here watching it, it sure didn't feel like one. It felt like we just cracked a hole and tried it. We were falling into it. I mean, it's... You know, those incredible opportunities that everybody says are opportunities 6 months later sure don't feel like it would have happened.
Well, no, a really big down day. Everyone causes everyone to be a little concerned, even though it may be exactly what, as you said, a buying opportunity.
I mean, one of the issues I have, Steph, is that, obviously when you watch things every day, you can... You know, not see the forest because of the trees. I mean, there's no doubt that that happens. And that if you, one of my, had a client, he's got to be long dead. I haven't talked to him. Well, I haven't talked to him in a long time because he's dead, I think, but also I didn't talk to him a long time maybe before that. But when we first started PTI, he was one of our biggest clients, probably was our biggest client, 1991, 92. And these guys had, he had been a broker for Merrill Lynch in Columbus, Indiana in 1954. You know, so, and he was a World War II POW. His plane had gone down. He was a navigator in a B-24. Anyway, interesting dude. And if you make like one or two trades a year, I'm going to say this politically correctly, only an orangutan should really make bad ones. You know, because you're waiting for like the trade of the decade.
Right.
So, I mean, they waited and waited for, and it doesn't have to be stocks. You know, it could be property, it could be anything. But I think these guys, back in the Resolution Trust era in the 80s and so forth, those guys waited and waited until there wasn't a new golf course built in Arizona or California. I mean, the market was, and property was really basically flat on its ass. And these guys went out and they bought, somebody started to build a golf course or two in Arizona. So they went to this equipment auction out in California and ended up buying, I don't know, scrapers, whatever the hell you need for build golf courses. And they bought like three or four of these things, and they ended up renting them in Arizona for like 2 months. They got back the money they just paid for the darn things. You know, it was just, but you know, in the, but if you wait and wait and wait and find, you know, the turn, my concern is, and I'm not going down this road too far, maybe too late for that, but, you look at like, you know, Christmas Eve, you say we're down, you know, 1.5% or something like that. Or if we have a 4 or 5% quote correction, that everything is a screaming buy. Yet we're really up such a dramatic amount since, you know, 2008. I mean, we've doubled,
right?
Or more. I mean, I don't see where it is written, you know, it's not like the tablets came down from heaven. I don't see where it's written that when we start to go down, somehow there's this floor at 4 or 5% or even 10. I mean, I hope there is, and my bet would be that there is, but I don't know that I, you know, if I can stomp on my floor, I don't know that there's another floor below it, a lot stronger, 4% below. I mean, I don't know where people get the idea, because I've seen, you know, I lost a lot of money in the 87 crash, and one of the reasons why I didn't panic and start buying puts like halfway through or three quarters of the way through was, I looked at all the bad things that happened in the market, like even before my lifetime. And the crash of 29 was what? 10%? Eisenhower's heart attack was 6 or 7. When Reagan got shot, it was what? 3 or 4. Kennedy got killed, it was 7. I mean, nothing had been more than 10%. And yet the crash of 87, right, if you took Wednesday through Friday night, was 32%. So what would think anybody to believe on Friday night, when you're already down, you know, 15% or something, that if that wasn't it, or you were down 10. In fact, we went down another 20 on Monday. So the idea that you've got it all figured out, and that every single, I'm not talking about you personally, every single time we're down 4 or 5%, if you just hold your nose and buy and never, and not even worry about the stuff you still have in the market, it's one thing if that's all protected and now you're just putting a toe in the water and buying a little something down 4 or 5. It's quite another. If you're, you know, if you've got $1 million in your retirement account, you're down 80 grand and now you're saying this is the best buy on earth and you go out on margin on your retirement account. I mean, you know, that's a whole different, I mean, I don't know where, I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know where it's written, even though everybody on TV will tell you that 4 or 5% everything's a buy, and most of the time it is. Sometimes it's 10% down. What about the time when it's going to keep going? I mean, I don't know where people quote this stuff like they know, because how do you know?
You don't. And that's one of the big, you know, mysteries or big misperceptions, I guess, in this industry, is that people actually know where the market's going. You know?
Well,
only people that know where the market's going are illegally, I mean, insider trading of some sort and another, and most likely will get in trouble for it eventually.
Here's another headline. It's a good one. Strong June's job report sends stocks lower. Five experts explains what comes next for the market. Let's put it this way. If you got five experts, it's like having five quarterbacks. Do you have an expert?
Well, they probably each have a different opinion. And, you know, just because they know how to throw the ball doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get it to the wide receiver and get it in the end zone.
The jobs report, God, I've been listening all weekend because I was home doing some stuff. And, well, was in Ogden Dunes for a while, but the beachless Ogden Dunes. To me, Steph, we're going to have Carl on in a little bit, but to talk about these numbers, so I don't want to upstage him, but we were supposed to have 160,000 people. We got 72. We're supposed to have 150,000 people. We got 240. Let me get this straight. 160 times 2 is 320. 72 plus 240 is 312. We're pretty much dead on. We just had a problem with the month to the month and seasonal adjusting. Why was last month horrible and this month terrific? When you put the two together, we're right on right where we've been for 10 years.
Well, a lot of this, I think, is PR. You know, having the best jobs out there, you know, I've got the best economy ever. Some of this is just politics playing out in sound bites.
Well, Steph, hold that thought. SP Futures now only down 5.25. They were down 7. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Face Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Mowry, Mr. Matt Weber on the board, Mr. Jack Silverman. We also have Stephanie Koning with us. With Mr. Carl Denninger in about 15, 20 minutes. S&P futures down 5.25, NASDAQ futures down 27.50. Dow futures down 59. Big stock movement in the Dow. We got Apple down 298 to 201.30. We've got Boeing down $5, 350.74. Those two stocks have been up and down on the Dow a lot lately. Apple ran back up to 2005. Now it's back at 201.30. Around the rest of the world, we've got DAX down 11. Let's call that one flat. FTSE up 1. Let's call that one flat. CAC down 3. Let's call that flat. So snooze-a-ram over in Europe. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 212. It's a full percent. We've got the Shanghai down 77. That's 2.5%. Evidently, they're not thinking the Fed's going to cut rates based on this number. I don't think a number makes any difference if you average the 2 months together, but that's just me. I guess I'd have been buying over in China, and I'm getting run over. Hang Seng down 443, 1.5%. Over oil, we've got the oil down 4 cents, call that flat, 57.47. Brent down 4 cents, 64.19. So that spread is now $7.70, so back up from like 6.5. Natural gas 241, RPOP gas 192. I got some gas in Indiana. Eat your heart out, Matt Weber, 278. We've got gold up 810, 1408.20. Big move in gold. Silver up a dime, 1510. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, paying $3.50 for your gas.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. This sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability. It's available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription, however, at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. So we encourage you to go and sign up for that. Heading back to work this morning, and there's some issues to report. Coming in, traffic starting to build on the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. We do have some closures downtown as setup for Taste of Chicago begins, which is scheduled for Wednesday, July 10th through Sunday, July 14th. But Jackson Boulevard between Michigan Ave and Lakeshore Drive is closed. And also, it looks like some closures at Congress, too. Columbus Drive between Roosevelt Road and Monroe is closed. And then, as I mentioned, Congress Parkway, if my screen can get there. There it is.
Congress Parkway is fine. I'm looking right at it.
Yeah, Congress Parkway between Columbus Drive and Congress Plaza Drive is closed. So a few closures in that area of Taste of Chicago all week as they set that up. And then, of course, the Taste is the 10th through the 14th.
Manny, how much smaller is the Taste than it used to be? Or is it back up to being regular
I think
size?
It's much smaller. I don't know exactly what percentage, but I think it's much smaller. We have a crash downtown Ontario at North LaSalle Street. And then up in Rogers Park, Sheridan Road between Devon and Granville is closed for an accident investigation. CTA is rerouting the number 136 and number 147 and 151 buses due to that crash. And then on the south side, there was an overnight shooting that has Dixie Highway between 154th and 150th Street closed for a police investigation. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful summer day in Chicagoland. Lots of sunshine today, a high of 77 degrees. Right now, it's crystal clear and 66 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 104 today. Right now, it's clear and 76. In sports, the Cubs and White Sox split their four-game Crosstown Classic this year, each team winning a game apiece at their respective ballparks as the Sox beat the Cubs 3-1 yesterday at Guaranteed Rate to wrap up the first half of the season. Not officially the first half, but the pre-All-Star break portion of the season. Diamondbacks beat the Rockies 5-3. So as we take a look at our standings here heading into the All-Star break, the White Sox are 42-44. Third place in the AL Central, 12.5 back of the first place Twins. The Cubs, in spite of playing pretty bad baseball for the last month and a half, are still in first place because the Brewers and Cardinals haven't been playing very well either. Cubs are 47-43, first place in the NL Central by a half a game over the Brewers. To wrap up their pre-All-Star break portion of the season. And the Diamondbacks have won three in a row heading into the break. They're 46-45, but 13.5 back of the first-place Dodgers. They're in second place in the NL West. Lastly, women's national team, as most people watched yesterday morning, shut out the Netherlands 2-0 to win back-to-back World Cups, their fourth World Cup overall. And the men's team was in action at Soldier Field last night in front of 60-plus thousand people. They lost to Mexico in the Gold Cup 1-0.
They don't get paid enough, Manny.
The women?
That's they say.
Well, if you break it down yesterday by winning the whole thing in the World Cup with all the bonuses and incentives in their deal, each lady takes home $247,000. If the men were to do that, to win the men's World Cup, each guy would take $1.1 million home. So four times more, or a little over four times more. It's a pretty big disparity, especially when the TV ratings and everything are pretty much equal.
Actually, the gates are somewhat equal, but the TV, they sign one contract. Evidently, you can't really break out who gets a bigger piece. Now, when you take the men...
All I know is that a lot of people who don't generally watch soccer on TV like to watch the women's. So if I were, obviously I'm probably a little partial to this, having been a soccer player 90% of my life too, but the women's seems to get a lot more play.
So does women's beach volleyball.
Yeah.
That's true.
They probably make less too.
That'd be funny if they made less too.
Yeah, no kidding.
It would make sense. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, like for me, I don't watch women's soccer, you know, regularly, but when they're in the World Cup, I watch at least, you know, the final. And so to Steph's point, people that don't even watch the sport will tune in and watch, but I do the same for the men as well. I don't really watch MLS or anything like that, but then when the USA team is in action in the World Cup, I'll watch them. But I didn't watch like the Gold Cup yesterday.
Well, I'm not gonna take a shot at the ladies because obviously they are not only fun to watch, they're spectacular athletes.
They're like way better than their competition. I mean, when you watch them, they're faster, they're more aggressive, they're much better than, you know, Netherlands was a really good team that didn't trail the entire tournament. And it was like, you know, the cliche men versus boys, which doesn't really apply here, obviously. But it was like they were much better. I mean, across the board, I thought.
Well, you look at my alma mater, the boys are hacking around, the girls win everything in Notre Dame, or close in everything.
Yeah.
In this country, we start women's soccer, you know, at like 5 or 6.
Yep.
And there's a lot less other sports that women compete to play with. So, you know, in soccer here, you've got the men compete with football and baseball, and then probably some lacrosse in certain parts of the country, and a couple other sports, right? So pretty much we encourage our women to go towards soccer, and it's the primary sport that most women play.
If I had to give a just a complete economic argument, which is going to cause all the... But, Steph, you're far enough away, you're on the phone, you can't wing something at me. Although you'll have a hunch, you'll hold a grudge, and you'll find a night where we do see each other, and you'll wing something at me. But I'm going to say the reason why the ladies get paid less is because they're coming from other places where they can't make as much. I mean, the guys in the World Cup are coming from Manchester United, where they're making a gazillion dollars. And where do these women play when they're not on the World Cup team?
Oh, well, there's a women's league that actually does really well. Like we've got the Chicago Fire. There are women's leagues that play, and they go around this country and are quite successful. I mean, every dad I know whose little girl plays usually ends up taking their kids there. But to your point, it's not an international stage, so you're right. The money that's in it is probably not the same as with the men's. However,
I mean, these ladies, they sign more. When they sign to get on the team, I think it's a $15,000 bonus. All aside, and how much, you know, you want to do something for mother and country, I don't know that you get somebody leaving Manchester United for 2 months for $15,000 bonus. I'm kind of playing devil's advocate, but
no, I agree with your point there. The only thing I would say is that there's no, I mean, very few USA men that are good enough to play on Manchester United.
Well, that's why we never win the World Cup. We didn't even qualify last time,
right? So, you know, the women here play in the women's professional league in the U.S., and the men here typically play in the men's professional league in the U.S. A few of them are good enough to play in European Soccer League. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Christian Pulisic, the young guy that has been at Dortmund and now is going, I think, to like Chelsea or something. He's one of the best players in the world, and he's American. So there are, you do have guys like that. He's, you know, he makes millions and millions, and so he's not going to, like, he's, to your point, he's not going to play for 15 grand probably. But the rest of the U.S. men, I mean, a lot of them anyway, are just guys that aren't good enough to play on in
because, I mean,
Premier League.
World Cup is a 4-year. Now, these ladies, I'm losing track of my years here. A lot of them, I'm sure, have some place to play, but now most of them are going to be on, like, the Olympic team next time, right?
A lot of them will move over to the Olympic team, yeah. I mean, a lot of them have come out of college, and a lot of them are a little bit older than that, too. But they have other jobs also. Sometimes it's not just that they just play soccer.
Well, you know, anyway, it was spectacular, and... The 15 grand for signing up seems a little light. I gotta go with them on that. It seems a tad light.
It's a tad light with the viewership that they end up ultimately getting.
Oh yeah, I agree.
Kevin writes in, which is another point, is offering the U.S. men's soccer team millions to win the World Cup is like offering me millions to run 100 meters under 10 seconds. Not going to happen. empty gesture. Yeah. Which, you know, there's some merit to that as well.
Well, at least we got to make the World Cup, though.
Yeah.
Not win it.
Yeah.
Hey, Steph, I got a question for you. We don't have much time, but because we have Carl calling a little earlier today. But I listened to one of the games. It must have been Saturday night where the Sox and the Cubs were on. We only got 2 minutes, but you know what? I'm going to have you on for a long segment on this. But you know what? Maybe if you could stay for 5 minutes, maybe we'll have Carl on, and I'll and just for a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. It has to do with truth. And the one thing that I, even though I sometimes bash the Trump supporters a little bit, I'm coming to a conclusion, Steph, I cannot bash him on one thing, that they don't worry so much about how much the guy lies, because in their lifetime, all politicians have done nothing but lie to them. I can't refute that. I just can't. In any sort of conscience, I can't refute that. Can you?
Well, I mean, I think there's a difference between lying, you know, spinning the truth, and then doing really what's right. And I feel at the moment that we have a hard time. Politicians don't seem to do what's right for this country. They seem to do what's right for them. And so, I mean, if that's what we're calling lying, or even changing a position, because they all say they're going to do what's best for us when we elect them, and then they get in there and they don't seem to do what's best for us. So I think that's the perception from a lying perspective.
Well, I mean, in you know, I'm more ancient than most, certainly than you. I remember Lyndon Johnson saying we could win in Vietnam if we only sent 50,000 more people over there. I remember the Gulf War, second Gulf War, weapons of mass destruction. I mean, I've seen some whoppers on virtually every president along the way. I mean, they're not the daily fibs that this idiot tells, but I shouldn't say idiot. This guy tells, which drive you nuts if you're somebody who doesn't. Anyway, Steph, well, if you want to, come back for after break for just a second. SP Futures down 6, NASDAQ Futures down 29. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jacks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters, the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
I wasn't looking, but somehow you found me. I tried to hide from your love.
Oh, a Bond song. Jack, I'll bet you had no idea that was a Bond song. I'm going to say.
Not at all.
Not at all. Carl and Steph both knew that was a Bond song, didn't you guys?
I did.
Hey, how you doing?
How are you, man? Hey, Carl, we kept Steph for a second. One of our new contributors to the show, that if you're ever in Chicago, even though you refuse to come here, and we caucus one night, you guys would get along famously. I don't know if you'd agree on anything, but you'd get along famously. I have a question for both of you guys, because this is a interesting one, I think. I of course, those watching the Cubs and Sox the other night, anyway, I wake up and they're, I think it was Channel 7, and they've got this guy on there who's their political dude. And don't get me wrong, I've seen this guy before. I think he's actually very bright. He's an African-American gentleman that has a face and figure for TV, unlike me. And I think he's, you know, very, very bright. And he starts off on this routine about the gas tax here in Illinois being 19 cents and actually has a whole spot where it's his editorial piece that people in Illinois just don't get it, that this is going to be so much worth it for you to pay this because the pothole you hit last year and busted a tire and a wheel and it cost you $500 for a new wheel and tire or $400, whatever it is, that won't happen to you anymore. That somehow that this is the best thing that ever happened to you. It's like Tom Sawyer, you know, painting the fence, whitewashing the fence. And I'm sitting there going, you know, Carl and Steph, we have this new leadership gang. We've got this, I can't stand a man for what he's doing, and not personally. Pritzker with this whole thing, let's just tax everybody and we'll solve all the problems. We've got Lori Lightfoot, the African-American gay lady who's mayor. We've got the African-American lieutenant governor. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but now these people, I shouldn't even say that, this guy thinks that somehow or another I should believe him and I should believe these people. And yet in my lifetime, every single politician from Lyndon Johnson sending people to get killed in Vietnam to Bush doing that in Iraq, and every single one of these people either wasn't going to raise tax. Everyone has done nothing but lie to me my entire life. What makes these people think? Is it just a lack of history reading, or is it a lack of common sense regarding human beings? What makes them think that just because they think they're telling the truth, I should believe them? And what do
well,
I?
Well, they don't think they're telling the truth. I mean, you know, you just have to look one state over. Okay, just look at Michigan. Michigan has, and has always had, very high gas taxes. Always. Right? Their fuel prices are higher than in Illinois and Indiana, for that matter, and have been for quite a long time. My daughter and I were just up on Mackinac Island about a month ago. We ran a race up there, and, you know, eventually you end up having to stop and fill your car up, right? I mean, that's just kind of the way it works. And yet, from Flint south, the state line, there are potholes the size of VW microbuses.
Yeah.
And they've been there forever. All right. The roads in that half of the state stink. I could use some other language, yeah. But, you know, we're on the radio, right? And the reality is they've always stunk. All right. And Michigan taxes the living bejesus out of everybody for everything. It
yeah.
has a massively corrupt auto insurance system that robs people out of... If you live in Detroit, you're paying $5,000 a year for car insurance.
Wow.
All right. And oh, by the way, the reason they do this is because if you get hurt in a car accident, they screw you out of three times as much money at the hospital. And one of the first questions is, well, you know, was it a car wreck? And if the answer is yes, as opposed to, well, you know, I broke my leg walking the dog down the sidewalk, then the MRI is $6,000 instead of two, and, you know, and on and on and on and on. And they've done this for decades. When no fault was first put in, it was supposed to be to stop you from being hosed if the guy that hit you had no insurance and no money. Okay, you couldn't sue him because he didn't have anything. And so, you know, so basically you were hosed. Okay. That's a very pleasant idea. And oh, by the way, it actually worked for about the first 4 or 5 years. And then everybody figured out how to scam it. And that the government would not do anything about it. That they wouldn't prosecute anyone. They wouldn't throw anyone in jail. And as a result, you have substandard, shoddy construction, which goes on around Illinois, too. Right? I mean, you know, come on. You guys live there. I used to live there. Do you guys really think that if they did their paving jobs correctly, that the roads would fall apart as good, nearly as quickly as they do? Of course not. So, you know, I'm sure there's a little cutting going on with the cement and the blacktop and everything else, and the substrate's not really done right because, you know, we really don't care about that. We'll get another job to redo the road in another 4 years. And somehow, just adding more money is going to solve the problem?
I would say
start putting people in prison.
Well, I would say at some point, and I'll direct this at Steph, and Steph, you can dash if you're still here. At some point, why don't we as a citizenry demand? I mean, of course, I could never be governor, but if I was, I would feel an obligation to take a quarter page somewhere in the Tribune or someplace, the Peoria, somewhere is cheaper, and say, here's how the last 19 cents was spent by the old governors, which means 2% for roads, you know, eight cents for pensions, God knows what.
Right.
And here's what I'm going to do differently going forward to where you guys should work with me on this. Out of this 38 cents now, guess what? We're going to beef up the bid system. We're going to let people bid from out of state, so we might actually get a legitimate bid. We're not going to have people putting potholes in for 10 years and be retired for 60. I don't know if that's what's happening, but we're going to try and get 35 cents out of the 38 actually going to roads where before only 4 of the 19 actually went from. I mean, if somebody went and did that in a rigorous fashion, Carlin, I'd almost be willing to believe, but I don't see anything changing like that at all. Do you?
No, and it's not, you know, you guys are by no means unique, but it's amusing to watch the machinations. In fact, I have an article in the queue on this with Pritzker, and now you got your new mayor up there, and the games that are being played with the pension problem, which of course is just flat out corruption. I mean, that's how you got where you are, where you have a state constitution that says you can't impair those values, right? You have people on the same side of the table that negotiated allegedly both sides.
Right? Right.
And this is why public pensions for public employees and public union representation, even FDR said this needs to be outlawed. You can't have public union representation. And the reason is there's no adversarial process. Right? And so this is something that, I mean, you know, FDR, he was flat-out socialist. But even he recognized that this was so corrupt you couldn't possibly fix it.
I'm going to say that he was not. He seemed like a socialist. And I'll get Steph's opinion on this and we'll let her go, because I heard a little one in the background. I'm going to say FDR just had an idea that in a country like this, you had that nobody gets to starve and no old people get to live in hovels. I don't think he was ever, quote, a socialist.
Well,
yeah, I don't know.
When socialism was, you know, was, I can't say needed, but was utilized in order to keep the country moving forward. But that's a different story.
I don't think he would appreciate the 90 some billion million people and some sort of disability now. I don't think he'd be all for that at all, guys. I don't think so.
Well, yeah, you may be right there. I mean, I just see, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, back to the gas tax. I mean, history has proven that every time you tax this, you could see it in multiple different states, that this doesn't necessarily solve the road problem. And, you know, you're completely right. I think part of the problem is that people don't look at history, and you get new politicians coming in, and they say the same thing that a politician said 20 years ago, but they weren't around, they don't remember, and, you know, we don't look back or make people accountable to understand what the results were for past history. We could never do that in the financial industry. I mean, we'd be tossed out and seen as incompetent, but they are still seen as competent.
Well, did the person who said the lottery was going to solve the school problems, did he actually believe it? The person who said off-track betting was going to solve something or the casinos, did they actually believe it, or was it all bullshit even at the time?
Well, let's give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that they were naive, right? And they believed it. The question is why do we not have anyone else who's holding them accountable and saying, well, that's great that you believe this, but it hasn't worked the six other places or the three other times, you know, it's been tried in other arenas. What's different about this?
Well,
and isn't that what the media is supposed to do?
I'm not so sure what the media is supposed to do.
At this,
I mean, Who do we have, Carl? We had, who's the lady from Washington at the big, she was on the show a couple times. Oh, God, how can I forget her name? You know what I'm talking about.
Fitz?
No, she's, I'll think of the name, but she came out and said that they're journalism majors. They don't even know how to quiz the Fed. They don't know anything about economics.
Well, I mean, you know, but I don't know that they don't know. I think there's a much more perverse problem going on here. And in the context of the federal government, although it's true at the state level too, you see the same thing. And that is that if, as long as you have interest rates anywhere in the curve that are below the rate of fiscal deficit spending as a percentage of the economy, as long as that is the case, then you are blowing bubbles. You are going to produce uneconomic outcomes because you are paying people to borrow. And one of the people you're paying to borrow is the federal and state governments,
right,
who, of course, have privilege because their debt is allegedly, and therefore it is not subject to leverage limits like you have on everybody else. So if I want to be infinitely leveraged in treasuries, that's allowed because treasuries cannot default. All right? And so what you do is you produce this distortion all the way across. When the crash happened in 2008, I caught Bernanke yanking liquidity out of the system into the middle of it right after Lehman collapsed. He pulled $60 billion in one day out through the New York Fed trading desk.
Why?
Okay, so this stuff used to be public. It was, well, it still is. It's just that that's not how they do monetary policy anymore. But, of course, that was before quantitative easing and everything else. All right, so I had printouts of this, and I ran an article on it, and then I faxed, actually paid to send the fax to every single member of Congress with the table, with the printouts, the graphs, and said, okay, next time you have Humphrey Hawkins and this clown is in front of you, why don't you ask him why he exacerbated a liquidity crisis while he was saying in public that he was adding liquidity into the system in order to prevent a catastrophe.
So why did he?
He lied.
Why
did he? Flat out.
Why?
I don't know, but you know what? There was not one single question asked by any of the reps or senators on this subject. Not one.
So you mean this guy, in the midst of all that mess, sold $60 worth of bonds instead of bought them?
$60 billion.
Yeah, billion. Why? What? First of all, how did he even? Who ponied up for him in the middle of the crisis?
Somebody, obviously. But I mean, the OMO records off the Fed trading desk, and what it used to be called the slosh report. Okay, nobody pays any attention to it anymore because it doesn't mean anything anymore. But back then, it did, because it was the primary way with which the Fed regulated the money and credit system.
It still is.
Yeah, but, well, supposedly. But now we have this, you know, multi-trillion-dollar balance sheet that was $800 billion at the time. It actually, when you moved around $40 or $50 billion, that was a lot.
Well, yeah. It's... do you think they screwed up?
No, I think it was an intentional act that they were trying to force Paulson and the government to bail out Lehman Brothers.
Which didn't happen.
I think they intentionally crashed the market to try to force the government to step in and bail out Lehman.
Did they not want to bail out Lehman, or were they just too slow?
I think that the problem with there was a political problem with bailing out Lehman. There was a lot of bad blood there. The same sort of thing that happened with Bear Stearns.
Yeah.
Okay, and so, you know, it's just like anything else. I mean, at some point you get the wrong guy mad, and if he's in power, he finds a way to hose you.
Well, I mean,
but
if you're going to be really...
Here's the other thing, though. There was a lot of fraud there, okay, because when the Veloukis report came out on Lehman's collapse, one of the things that was in there that, again, nobody paid any attention to is no questions asked about this during congressional testimony. The Fed was fully aware of it. In July, Citibank factually knew Lehman Brothers was bankrupt. And the reason they knew it is that Lehman attempted to do an overnight repo, a tri-party repo with them. Gave them the collateral. Citi looked at it and said, that's trash. What else do you have? And they said, nothing.
Well, I think that the well, and you can critique me because you obviously more know more about this than me. I don't think anybody knew, the people that we pay good money to, Fed people and Treasury people, anybody knew the how interesting, by the way, I want to talk about Deutsche Bank at some point today, the interlocking pieces were to this. And I think that Paulson, being a, I won't say former Goldman guy because there's no such thing, it's like a former Marine, was damn near gleeful when Bear Stearns and Lehman got in his trouble until he realized that, you know, he's like the guy in Hunt for Red October, you arrogant ass, you've killed us. I don't think he had any idea that was going to come flying back at Goldman, and then he panicked and said, we got to save somebody here.
Well, I think there was this belief by a number of people that, you know, oh, well, that was just, you know, that's just Dick's fault. He, you know, that stupid jerk.
Yeah.
Right? And the problem is, it wasn't. It was everybody. And you've got that going on now. You know, this thing with Deutsche Bank, you know, gee, that's only been a slow burn now for how long? Okay? Who's been up to their neck in the derivatives mess for the last 15 years?
I was
going to
say, yeah,
15 years. Hey, Steph, before we let you go, hey, who else did they buy? To me, this is in the three of us, and are the ones on the show that beat up on the antitrust laws as much. Now this is in Europe. I know they bought Dresdner Bank, that I went and lectured to, Dr. J and I. Didn't they buy several? It's not just Deutsche Bank, aren't they? They're like four household name banks from 20 years ago, aren't they? I mean, they're in this mess. Didn't they buy like two or three other people?
Yeah, I think there were, but you know, it has been long enough that I mean, yeah, this is something. This whole derivatives thing and who was who was gobbling up whom, you know, around that time frame was really important to me because you know, I was like, okay, wait a minute, I better make sure none of my money is anywhere near these people are going to go boom, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like here,
it calmed down, and if I remember correctly, there was a lot of consolidation that went on. They were a big part of it.
Yeah, I mean, their stock, their total capital now, I don't think is as much as any one of the 40 grabbed individually.
No, they're not, and that's one of the problems is that the European Union has basically allowed these guys to become zombies and prop them up, and you know, and the premise is just like it was over here. Oh, they're earning their way out of it. Well, if you think about it, what does earn mean in the context of a bank? It means steal, because how do they get money? They get money by taking a piece of the vig out of everything that goes through their hands.
Well, Steph, how about we let you go because you're hanging? Thank you very much for hanging overtime, and hopefully I'll see you this week. Say hello to the little one for me, young Claire.
Will do.
All right. Yeah, Carl, it's not you. If J.P. Morgan ever went under, I mean, I'm still old enough to remember, it's not just J.P. Morgan, it's Chase, it's First National Bank of Chicago, it's how many other people are chopped up in that? Where did Manny Haney go? Did they go to Citi or did they go to Chase?
I don't know. I mean, all of this.
Yeah.
I know that, like, there was South Trust, and then they got swallowed by Wachovia, and then Wachovia blew up.
Yeah, they all, I mean, it's all right down the line. These guys all get, so it's not just one bank. I mean, Chicago, when I came down here to trade in the exchange, I'll bet we had, I'm going to say we had at least two of the top 10 banks, of Continental and First National Bank of Chicago. I don't think Chicago even has you got Harris, but it's owned by World Bank of Canada.
Right.
Who else? LaSalle. Well, LaSalle's a trust bank, and they're probably the single biggest, I'm going to say, as they always were, bank around, right?
Yeah,
part of the problem
I think that you have here is that it used to be that most of these firms, including Goldman for that matter, were partnerships. Okay, so the people who were invested in them, that ran them, had unlimited personal liability. So if you screwed up, you were ruined. You were personally ruined. Wasn't the company that got ruined. You got ruined.
Right.
And now we have done two things. One, we've allowed these guys to turn around and spin themselves off into public companies and trade stock. And then the other problem is we've gotten this idea that no matter how ridiculous the things that you do are, like selling securities to people that your own trading desk says are vomit, yet you're calling them good, high-quality securities, okay, nobody's going to go to jail, no matter what. And so the absolute worst thing that happens from your personal perspective as a director or an officer is that you lose your cushy seat here and you go work across the street.
Right. Well, yeah, if you got the clients, you go anywhere you want.
Yeah, and see, there's something very perverse about that. I mean, it's when you're swinging around levered positions, fraud all of a sudden makes those completely worthless.
Well, on the lower end of the scale, Carl, if you're in the business like a smaller broker dealer like PTI, or even if you're lower down the chain at Charles Schwab. Charles Schwab is protected by the corporate shell, but the person who, like maybe doesn't supervise somebody in compliance, that person, without any sort of it's not like they stole or did or fraud or anything, that person can be drummed out of the industry or be fined on an individual basis.
Well, yeah, but think about how rarely it really happens. I mean,
it's happening a lot.
Look at Wells Fargo. Okay, how many times did they rip off millions of customers?
No. We're talking. See, you're a big guy. You're talking on the corporate jet level. I'm talking about the Piper Club level. If it was,
well, no, I'm talking. No, actually, I'm talking about all the way down the line. Did anybody that worked for Wells and was involved in setting up these fake, bogus accounts and earning all of these billions of dollars for the company, did any of those people actually get charged and be criminally prosecuted and go to jail? Any of them?
No, but I'll bet you that if there is an arbitration way down the line and some individual two steps off the bottom didn't supervise somebody properly and the individual person gets in there, that person gets beat. Even though he's got a boss who's got a boss who's got a boss who's got a board of directors. It's happening on the lower levels, and if it's a smaller firm, it happens to the president of the smaller firm.
I agree with you there. The problem, though, that you have with this is that, okay, so you've got that case, and that person gets drummed out of the industry, and and they lose their nice job, and they don't have their golf membership anymore, right? But
It's below that guy. The golf membership guys are okay. It's below that.
Yeah, the thing, though, that happens that makes this never stop is that, first off, the golf membership guy still has his job.
Right.
But secondly, and at least as importantly, the company keeps the money.
Oh, yeah. And see,
that's the problem, is that you can't, if you make stealing something that never actually has a price associated with, you're going to get more of it.
Well, it happens. My producer, Matty Weber, his real job is in computer, shall we say, security for credit cards and so forth.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that are they're the FBI. If you call them up, Carl, they'll tell you if it's not $1 million, we don't chase it.
Oh, they don't care.
Yeah, you don't.
I know. I've seen it, and they could care less. Yeah.
But I mean, you think the thieves don't know that?
Well, of course they do.
Yeah, keep it under $100,000. Nobody will ever look for us.
You could. I mean, and the thing is, keep it under $100,000. That sounds wonderful. Except, how many people get ruined by five? Right.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I mean, you think? I mean, I kind of started out the segment by saying, you think the people in Illinois, then like the new people elected. I mean, if Jay Pritzker or any of these people or Lori Lightfoot came in, and I said, okay, everybody's been in your job before, there's nothing but lie to everybody. I just paid $5.30 for the toll on the Chicago Skyway. It's up from $4 to $4.50 to $5 to $5.30 in probably 2 years. Now, when we sold that thing to somebody, it was a good deal. And why would I ever believe you? What do you mean? It's me. I'm not going to tell a lie. And I'd feel the same way, I guess, Carl, if I ever got elected someplace. Well, wait a minute. Don't judge me by the people before me. But how can you not? Why would you ever believe the next person? I never thought I'd say something like that, but why would you ever believe Lori Lightfoot telling you anything?
I'll tell you how you get me to believe you. Okay, when you pass this next gas tax, all right, you put a criminal penalty in there if it gets diverted? How come that's never there?
Because they want to divert it. The lottery get diverted?
Well, of course they do. So didn't you just answer your own question? Why should you believe them? You shouldn't, because if they did mean it, there'd be a criminal penalty in there for stealing the money. But there's not.
Well, how long does it take for somebody to get co-opted? I think it took her, this is, you know, it's not a personal thing. It took her about, I don't even think she was in office yet. When she traded off.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you even manage to wave the flag first?
Well, I mean, she got co-opted on Lincoln Yards. She traded an incredibly horrible project, which is a total gift to these people nobody even likes, and she traded it off for allegedly some more minority jobs. You're supposed to be mayor of all people, not just minorities.
Anyway, well, but that's not how it works anymore. You know how this is. This is the biggest issue when you get down to it with people in this country. Is that the Constitution is supposed to be a contract between the people and the government. Okay? Government starts with no rights, never had any, can't give them out because it doesn't have them. You can't give what you don't have first.
Right.
You don't have title to a car, you can't sell it. All right. So that's basically where the foundation is. We've gone away from that. It doesn't exist anymore.
No.
All right, you just look at what's going on with the census thing. Okay, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution mandates, nobody reads this stuff, mandates that non-citizens be removed from the rolls before apportionment is done. Mandates it. Doesn't say can, it says shall.
Well, was that before women were citizens? Probably.
Well, you know what? Guess what? Then we had two more amendments, with the 19th and we had the 26th, okay? So we did... Women now have suffrage, and then we move the suffrage age from 21 to 18. Okay?
Yeah.
So there's two more pieces of constitutional amendment that modified the 14th Amendment with regards to the census. However, nowhere does it say illegal aliens count. In fact, it says specifically that even if you've lost your voting rights as a result of a crime, you count.
Well, I would say that the one thing that's somewhat different there, Carl, and then we got to talk labor rates or labor stuff. And one thing that's, I think, slightly different, and again, this is not in the Constitution or anything like that. I'm going to say when the guys wrote the Constitution, had to do a lot with representation and the guys who were going to be, how many representatives you have and blah, 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 and all that
stuff.
And I get all that. But now it has kind of something to do with money, and it has more to do with money flowing towards services. And I think if you in this day and age, if you don't count all the people that you're giving the services that are to need the services, you're essentially screwing one state versus another. And I don't know that that's what you want to do. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Well, except the House is illegally constituted. Yeah, and remember, this goes back to corporate boards and Robert's rules and things like this. If you have not provided that requirement, then the states that had those illegals that were not deducted in the last sentence, and remember who was president then, right?
Yep.
He deliberately did that, all right? Every single act that the House of Representatives have taken, every penny they've spent since that date is illegal.
Well,
every act is void.
The Senate more than makes up for it for the states that are they end up getting screwed on the House.
Well, absolutely, but you know what? If the Constitution is a dead letter, then let's quit pretending we have one.
I think we need a constitutional convention at every level.
So, well, but if you won't enforce it, doesn't matter.
Well, we don't.
Okay. See, this is the problem. If the people of this country will not say this is what it says, it's in plain English. There's no question as to what the language is. There's no interpreting to have here.
Carl, you didn't. Okay. You obviously didn't listen on Friday when Kevin and I were going through. Or actually, Lou and I and Kevin were going through the flag laws and how you've got a government that's paying football teams for flags to essentially be on the ground. The flag law says the flag's not supposed to touch the ground, and yet we're paying people. We have. Matt Weber's Ford dealership with a flag, 4th of July sale with a flag sitting there, and it says absolutely no commercial use. We don't pay attention to any of this stuff.
No, we don't.
Hey, what about these labor numbers? Am I being naive by saying last month's low one, this month's high one? If you average them out, is exactly where the predictions were in the 2 months, or is there more to this than meets the eye?
No, it's about right, and you have to remember that this month, June, you know, June is June, okay? It was June last year, it'll be June next year. And June is a hiring month for the summer, always has been. We had almost 1.3 million people come out of the not in labor force number for June, which is very large. However, last year it was 1.324 million. The year before that, it was 1.167. So, I mean, it's right up the middle, okay?
Where are you getting at? I'm looking at 96,215 last month. I'm looking at this A1, and this month is 96,057. So I've got 150,000 people coming out of the final column where nobody goes, where nobody knows who those people are. I've got 100,000 more unemployed, and I've got, and this is a household survey, I've got,
right.
300, like 240 employed, but I've got the population up almost 140.
Yeah. But that's normal, okay? And again, what you have for June, the number that we printed on an unadjusted basis, leave all the nonsense that the government plays with the BLS. Just look at the unadjusted numbers in the household survey. It was right up the middle with the last few years. There was nothing unusual about it at all. And oh, by the way, in August, when we print the August number, the first week of September, it's almost certainly going to be negative because it almost always is.
How is it?
Because that's a firing month, okay?
But how, Carl, how does the timing, I mean, even the people who put this together, I mean, if you look at the 72,000 number in May, so say there's 20 days in the month, you're talking about 3,800 people getting hired per day. Now you flip to the next month, and now we've got 12,000. Even these guys, you have to understand that on June 1st, we didn't go from 3,800 to 12,000 per day. There's got to be a timing error in there, or a days error, or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the problem with trying to do this on a month by month basis and look at these things. You really have to look at this data on an unadjusted basis, annualized, okay? Because that's where you learn something from it. And by the way, if you do that, you'll find that we actually are at this point, and have been now for a while, since it's been almost a year, we've been under the 12-month replacement rate in terms of the number of adds into the workforce. So we really are losing ground on that basis, and it's been going on pretty much all year. We dipped into that negative area on a 12-month rolling basis now in February, and we've been there since. Now, you know, are there other times when we've been down? Yeah, there have, but this is consistent now. It's been going on for about 6 months. I start to pay attention when I see 6 months worth of movement, and the other problem within the internals is that the unincorporated people, those are small business folks, that is going the wrong way, and again, has been for about 6 months. Now, that latter one, in the face of all the bond market signals, everything's been pretty reliable as a recession indicator. So, you know, 1 or 2 months in doesn't mean a whole lot. You get to a six-month time period, that looks like a trend.
Carl, it looks to me, I mean, I'm looking at the 6 months, and again, I look at this, you know, page for idiots here, and you use the more detailed ones, but from December to June, I've got us with roughly 60,000 more people employed, and I got us with darn near 400,000 more in the column, we don't know what you do, and about 200,000 less looking for work.
Right.
So I don't think that's massive progress at all this year.
It's not, which is the thing is, we put about 2 million working age people into the labor pool every year, okay, approximately. And the first chart that I put up every month, the employment trends chart, has two lines on it. It has the monthly change, which is very noisy. You look at it, there's noise all over the place. But that red line, it needs to be over approximately 2,000, which is 2 million people, on a 12-month rolling basis. and it has dipped under there, but now we've got a hook on the bottom of that thing that's, you know, 6 months, like I said, about a 6 month trend now that's been below that 2 million level. And if that continues, there's, you know, there is a reason to believe that we're going to see that deterioration continue with some, you know, some ups and downs. And, you know, we might get a V that looks an awful lot like what we saw in, you know, 08, 09.
Well, Carl, I've got us with, we're going back on this stuff again, right? Trying to do this when you're not here, it's not so easy. If you look at the people that are employed versus the unemployed, and I'll put the unemployed as the people who are looking for work and all the other people, including students and so forth, that are there. And I got like 157 million versus 102 million. So it's roughly 2 by 3. And if you go back to like 2000 or 2000, actually 2006, that number is pushing 5 by 3, maybe even almost 2 to 1 a couple times. How much, I don't know how much worse we can get than 2 by 3 and not have a problem, because 3 people working for every 2 people not seems like we're really pushing it.
Well, that's the employment population ratio. That's the that is the number in the, you know, in the big table that is, when you get down to it, you could call it the government sustainability number.
Yeah, okay? But I'm saying, I don't,
because when it gets, the problem is all the people that are in that you know, that not working category, they're not paying any taxes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they might,
and if people say, "Oh no, no, they still, you know, they still pay some, you know, they still pay sales tax." That's true. However, they also suck off government services, and what they consume in services exceeds what they pay in taxes by a substantial margin. So they are net negative contributors, and that problem is the one that we, you know, we've had this slow climb up from the bottom in 2009, but that number is still way below where we were in 06, 07, and back in the 1990s.
I'm kind of curious, Carl. We got to go here for a break in a second. Hope you can hang on for a few minutes. That'd be great. I think a person, and one, I'm going to say, omission, mistake. I never want to accuse you of making a mistake. That people who are, shall we say, on the good end of the income statement, they seem to think that there's a big crossover between the federal income tax that people who are doing pretty well pay a lot of, and all the stuff that these other people are essentially using. And yet I know in the Chicago area, the guy who's got the family of four making 50 grand, who probably isn't paying much, if anything, in the way of income taxes, is absolutely getting stuck where the sun don't shine and every other tax on earth that he actually, you know, the police force, the fire force, Cook County Hospital, he's paying as much there really as the guy making dough. So, I mean, if you're on the low end, you are, I think, paying, quote, for your services. There's not a whole lot of help coming from Washington for County Hospital, I don't think. I mean, there might be some, but not a whole hell of a lot. The S&P futures down 675, NASDAQ futures down 29. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger and Mr. John Neal.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on board. We have Jack Silverman helping him out. We have Mr. Carl Denninger. We should have Mr. Jan Neal in a few minutes. SP Futures. Well, first of all, I'm going to do my read. Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability, is available on newsstands, $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. I would certainly think everybody should do that. We're trying to get some guests on this week from people who wrote these securities articles there, because there's some pretty darn good ones. Anyway, S&P futures up down 650, NASDAQ futures down 27, the Dow is down 59. So we're down a little bit on Friday. We're down a little bit today. We're down over 100 points earlier, but individual stocks in the Dow movement are Boeing down 531, and we got Apple down 293. Over in Europe, we're moving a little bit now. DAX down 11.1%. It was almost dead flat earlier. FTSE up $1.90. That is flat. CAC around down 3, flat. Asia, though, we've got some downside movement. Nikkei down 212. It's a full percent. Shanghai down 77. It's 2.6%. Hang Seng down 443. That's 1.5%. Got oil very quiet. Down 4 cents. West Texas down 4 cents. Brent. Gold, big move up, though. Up 8 bucks, 1408. Almost back to, the old highs were in 1415 range, but it's getting back up there. Silver up 13 cents, now 1513. What do you guys got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic starting to build heavily on the expressways as a lot of people are returning to work after being off last week. But no accidents to report on the Edens or Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. It's off the expressways where we have all kinds of issues. Last hour I mentioned all the closures downtown setting up for Taste of Chicago, so keep that in mind around Columbus, Jackson, and Congress, several closures there. We also have some issues in the city on the side streets as well. Due for other reasons. Ashland Avenue between Pierce Avenue and North Avenue in Lincoln Park is closed due to an accident that happened earlier this morning involving several vehicles, apparently, and investigation is continuing there. Then on the west side of the city, Grand Avenue at Austin is closed for police activity, reporting a CPD-involved shooting that happened at the 6200 block of Grand Avenue overnight, and so that's investigations going on. In Rogers Park, Sheridan between Devon and Granville is closed for a fatal accident investigation, and that's causing a rerouting of a bunch of different buses up in Rogers Park. And then I mentioned the issue on the south side. Dixie Highway between 154th and 150th is closed for police activity to investigate a shooting that happened overnight. So all kinds of, you know, sort of weird issues going on in the area. But the expressways, traffic's building, but nothing out of the ordinary there, so that's good news. Weather today, more good news. Sunshine, beautiful, high of 77. Right now it's clear and 69 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 104 today. Right now it's clear and 77. In sports, Cubs and White Sox split their two-game set and their four-game overall series this season as the Sox beat the Cubs 3-1 heading into the All-Star break. Diamondbacks top the Rockies 5-3. United States women's national team, soccer champions yet again, back-to-back World Cups for them and four World Cups overall as they shut out Netherlands 2-0. USA men's team lost the Gold Cup at Soldier Field last night to Mexico 1-0. Chief.
I mentioned many times on the show that my grandparents lived at 62nd and Wallace in the Inglewood neighborhood. So sure enough, Manny, I wake up Saturday morning and I hear five people shot at 61st place in Wallace, half a block away.
Yeah, half a block away.
And there can't be, if you go by there on the train, which you wouldn't want to drive over there, if you go by there on the train, my grandmother's house is still up somehow in this frame. All the ones around it that were brick are all down. I'm going to say there's one house maybe for every seven and eight lots. And still, there's enough people on a corner doing God knows what that people got to go by and shoot them all. And I don't even get this, what's going on, but this, we had another weekend where how many people shot and killed and everything else. It's kind of the Chicago phenomenon. Hey, Carl, how much you know about the gambling industry?
Well, I mean, odds are odds. Why we have that as a quote-unquote industry is one of those things that just makes you, if you understand anything about human nature and politics, everything else, you just scratch your head.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to understand the numbers. We're going to have more casinos here in Chicago. And the phenomenon here is that we have the racetracks. Of course, if you want to bet, you had to go to the track. Then it was OTB. Then it was, well, actually, the lottery came before the OTB because, of course, we needed to do that. Now, at the track, the state gets, I believe, 7%, and the track gets 7%, or 7.25%, right? They pay out 85% or something, I believe is the number. Now,
yeah.
Now you've got the lottery, which pays out maybe 60. And on and I think the spin games, the instant games, are all rigged, so they probably do way better on those. So now you decide you're going to have off-track betting, which just expands the horse thing, with the same pool, so you're down to 14.5% again. But now you decide you're going to have these video pokers and so forth in restaurants and bars. Now, you don't give those to the casino like I maybe thought you would. Now that becomes the state casino. So if it's Carl's restaurant, you got five video poker games in there, I think you're essentially, your casino is the state. I don't think you have to go through Harris and Joliet or anything. So God knows, I got to believe the state's back up to making 25-30% on those things, or 20. It's got to be way over, you know, the 7.5 they do on horses, which means why they don't mind screwing horses for these things. So now you're going back to a downtown casino in Chicago. But I got to believe if it's a privately owned casino, you just charge on the revenue and property. I mean, not on the revenue, on the income of that they make, plus the property taxes that you would normally charge any building. Now, why are we doing that now instead of just putting one-armed bandits in all the hotels or video poker where we're probably getting 25 or 30? Is there any logic to this, or are they just doing whatever they can do to, you know, shooting all around the world trying to find a nickel out of somebody?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. And the other thing is that you have, you know, video poker machines are essentially faceless and employmentless, right?
Yeah.
And yet a building with blackjack tables has a dealer behind it. You know, you've got a pit boss standing there, make sure you're not, you don't have an extra ace up your sleeve or whatever. And so, you know, there's the argument that's always made that, well, you know, we're going to bring employment into the city or whatever area you do this in. It never works out that way for the common people, because yes, you have jobs, but they're $10 an hour jobs. They're stinky. Okay. You know, the state gets their piece of it, which is why they like it. And the who gets hosed? The person on fixed income who really can't afford to be in a gambling casino with a guaranteed house percentage over a period of time. I mean, you know, anybody can walk into a casino and place a bet and win.
Right.
The problem is, if you stay long enough, you're going to leave with no money. And that's just the way it works, okay? That's just how the odds work. If you play enough hands, you will lose. And that's, you know, statistically, that's just how it works. The games are set that way. But it's not a con in that it's not a secret that this is the case. But people still go into it anyway. It's the same thing with the lottery. The lottery I've often called it a stupidity tax.
Let's just say that the term for it in college, Carl, was, in statistics classes, was that people's risk reward curve is, slightly skewed to the right.
Yeah, just a little. And you know what the biggest problem I have, though, especially with things like the lottery, is that you have this fake number, which is the supposed jackpot, but it's actually an annuity value. Okay? The taxes are not taken out of that. And on top of that, the interest that the state makes on the money during the time that it's sitting in the annuity isn't yours. It's theirs.
Well, it actually is. Right. If it's a $100 million lottery that you win and you want the cash tomorrow, what do you get? Like 55 or 60 minus taxes?
Yeah, about 55. So the thing is, what they ought to, I mean, if you're going to advertise the numbers, it should be the cash amount, right, number one. And then that way, if I've got the odds, I can figure out exactly how bad of a gamble it actually is. Otherwise, I've got to back in three or four different calculations to get there. And as it turns out, with the changes that they've made to things like Mega Millions and the Powerball, even when you see these billion-dollar jackpots on the money odds, it's still a bad gamble, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I mentioned before, statistically, what that means in layman's terms, and Carl can kick me if I'm wrong, is that if you go to the racetrack, probably if you think you know what you're doing, which a lot of people think they do, and some people I think actually do, Carl, because that's a pari-mutuel system, and I got to believe if you really study horses, the state in the track is only taking 14%, 14.5%. So if you actually are smarter than most of the rest of the people and know horses, you might actually be able to make up that 14.5%. But you're absolutely correct. At the end of the day, the track doesn't care if Carl wins eight races in a row because he knows his stuff. The fact is, they're getting their 14.5%. It's like Duke and Duke. We always get our commission. So they don't really care.
Well, and the same thing's true. Like, you know, I like to play poker, face-to-face poker, okay? And that is the cleanest gamble in the house because you're playing against other humans.
Right.
However, the rake on the table, okay, is still there.
Right.
Okay, that's how the house makes their money.
Yeah, but you could conceive.
I can overcome that. I can potentially overcome that because that percentage is reasonable.
Right. You can. I think if you were a sober, good poker player and went to Binney's downtown in Vegas and played, or Binion's, and you played 5-card stud or 7-card stud or something, and all of a sudden the other people aren't as good at players as you, I think on most weekends you'll come out ahead. But the house doesn't care. You're winning from other people.
Right. The house doesn't care because they get their percentage, but at least there, the odds, while they're not in your favor, are able to be overcome by superior skill.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you could get a table of 5 drunks, in which case, unless you get horrendous cards, you're going to win.
Well, that's happened when I've been out in Vegas before, and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, I can imagine. But I'm saying, you're right, but for society, is it a zero-sum game? And I think it actually is, Carl, but I don't even think these guys know the revenue that they're talking about. They see somebody heading to Hammond, and they say, we've got to have a casino here. The guy won't go to Hammond. If a casino somewhat breaks even, where's all the tax revenue?
Well, all these people care. See, here's the thing. All they care about is that they see the number, okay, and they think, well, we're going to get it. But you have to, there's a downside to this, though, which is that the money that the guy that goes to the casino loses, he can't spend somewhere else.
Right. Well, that's...
Okay? And not only was that spending somewhere else potentially going to provide someone else a job somewhere, doing something productive instead of sitting there dealing cards, but on top of that, there was a sales tax and an employment tax and all these other tax take off of that that gets shifted into the casino from an employment tax perspective, but the sales tax that was going to be earned off of that is gone.
Well, if you are a city like Michigan City, which gets a little tourism from Chicago, I mean, they don't call Long Beach the Irish Riviera for nothing, because people from the South Side, Irish, all a lot of them had their places down there. But I'm going to guess that the Michigan City Casino was sold to the population as, you know, 60% tourist money.
Right.
And I'm going to guess that it's probably 15 to 20% max tourist money coming in there.
Yeah, the argument that's always made for these things is well, it's going to be Vegas.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a few locals that play. They don't play for very long unless they're good at it, because otherwise they end up broke. But for the most part, okay, I mean, you know, the money that comes into Vegas comes through McCarran Airport, okay?
Well, I mean, there was... I don't want to ask you how old you are, Carl, but...
Is that true for this? Probably not.
My first trip to Vegas, I'm going to say, was in 1977. My buddy Dak goes, hey, we're going to Vegas. Okay. So we went, but... I'm going to say that at that time, the population of Las Vegas, well, I know it wasn't, because the state wasn't 1 million people, so the city couldn't have been, right, because the city's in the state.
Right.
And I'm going to say the traffic from McCarran was, pick a number, Carl, 5 million a year. So you could actually make the claim that at the 10 biggest casinos at the time, which I'm sure was in all of them, was 80% tourist money.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say, Carl, even then, if you looked at the downtown places, the places right out on Boulder Highway, the slot machines in the gas stations, all those kinds of things, I'll bet that was 85% local money.
Yeah, that's probably true. And you know, the thing is it's never, see that, you know, the politicians they BS people like that on this stuff like crazy. But it's, you know, I don't care if people want to gamble. I mean, you know, at least it's voluntary, right? But the reality is that there's a lot of obfuscation of, you know, of what the gamble really is. I mean, yeah, you can look it up, but where's the fair disclosure? I mean, you've got to do that in the securities business, right?
Yeah, I don't, Carl, for you and I, I mean, back in the day when I didn't have my own business, you actually have walking around, though, for me to put in 1985, I was never a big swinger out there, to put, you know, $2,000 in my pocket and go out to Vegas. And of course, if I ever lost like more than 400, I was pissed off and just went to shows for the rest of the weekend. So I never once came close to losing everything I brought out there. For me to do that, and it wasn't affecting my lifestyle. I didn't have kids. I wasn't married. You know, I don't have a problem with me doing that, Carl doing that, Matty Weber doing that. But I have a real problem with, the bum coming off the street and buying 15 lottery tickets. I don't know where the break there is to where you got to take care of people, but you also don't dangle every kind of temptation in front of them when they can't do the ads. I mean, I know.
Well, it's kind of like handling, you know, somebody you know is a raging alcoholic and you dangle a bottle of Jack in front of them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I mean. I just think they think they actually have a chance of changing their life through these tickets, and I guess you do have quote a chance. But like I said, I've said this a million times on the show, Audrey and I go to some of the places in the suburbs. Carl, some of the waitresses come off work, make $100, and they sit down and lose 50 at the game before they go home. I mean, in the end, it's not positive if everybody, it's just nothing more than a tax. if everybody in town blows $20 in the bar every night on a video poker. It's the same as if you raise your property tax. It's not the same as you and I having a nice time out in Vegas 30 years ago and going to a couple of shows and coming back and having a nice weekend, even if we manage to piss away $500 on the blackjack table. Somehow you can't look at it like yourself when you're looking at it for millions of people as a governor. And these guys just look at this like, is there any possible? The latest was this weekend. Get a load of this. Indiana's got massive fireworks stuff. I mean, you've lived up here. I mean, some of those play in Illinois. It's, quote, illegal. Yet, if you drive around on 4th of July, you'd swear it wasn't. So, of course, one of the new state senators, do you realize the revenue we're losing by not selling it here? We don't care about people's fingers or eyes. There's this concept of revenue lost, this entrepreneurial thing of legislation. Is there any way we could lobotomize them when they get there and just not think that way? Or is it we're doomed to this forever?
I think, we get the government we deserve, I guess is the short answer.
Well, I mean, but how do they keep blowing this stuff by people? I mean, I know you and I, you know, watch this stuff and dig, you know, we write about it, we care about it. I mean, I have to watch the news because that's my job, to essentially worry for my clients' money so they don't have to, which is fine. It's a job I chose, and I actually like it, and I like my clients. So it's not a bad thing, but the more you see, I mean, how many times are they going to blow the same stuff by us in just every election? At some point, you got to go, God, when are we going to wake up?
Until somebody tells them to go stick it, I guess, is the answer, right?
Well, I mean, do we have to hit bottom, and what is bottom going to look like in today's
world? I don't think you're going to like the look of it at all.
No.
But, I mean, you know, at some point, the level of extraction within the economy gets to the point that the people who do productive things just say, you know, I'm not going to do it because it's just going to get stolen anyway. And it happens slowly. You know, you have people like me, I've got a business, a product that I can put out on the market tomorrow. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
It's not going to happen. Somebody may buy it from me wholesale and turn around and do that, but I'm not going to do it. And I wouldn't set up an internet company today.
Well, one of the tax guy I had at Notre Dame, was an ex-football player, nice guy, big, huge guy. God bless him. For a man that age, I mean, he was this big, huge guy, played guard for someplace. Dinkelo is his name. And he said that worldwide, no matter what you do, no matter how corrupt it is, he says pretty much everybody lands at about 25% of the income in a country goes to government.
That's true.
He goes, in Italy, you pay off the tax guy. You know, whatever, you pay them off enough to where you're down to 25%. France, he's had some other, he rattled off about 8 countries and how corrupt the system was, and he said you basically end up at 25%. Well, here in this country, Carl, I went through just the published stuff. Not counting, you know, ridiculous stuff for trying to trick you on street cleaning day with the $75 ticket, or the parking meters, or the tolls, or all the other crap that people are getting used to essentially paying. And we're pushing, if you just added the state, local, federal, and payroll taxes, we're pushing 31%.
Right.
And I think if you dropped all the fees on it, I'll bet we could probably get to 32.5. We're at the point where I think we're at the breaking point. I mean, at some point, you just have to tell the governor or the president, where all you guys are doing, get them all in the same room, the president, the governor, the mayor, and the head of the county board, and say, figure it out. It's enough. And I honestly think we're there. Carl, and I mean I see it straining. I mean, I see stuff that where you lose money on your business, you can only deduct $3,000 a year for the rest of your life as a capital thing, and you're not going to be back as an entrepreneur ever.
No, you're never going to get it. You're never going to get that back, and you're never going to do it again because
and that's
the thing is that there's an old saying from that you know, that people that gamble and do it professionally and do okay at it, but you can pound a guy over the head relentlessly and beat him and beat him and beat him. You keep coming back and he'll keep playing against you. You're better than he is and you just beat him. You screw him out of a nickel, he never comes back.
Right. Well, we're looking for this growth and we can't wait to stop the growth.
Well, it isn't there. That's the scam. At the government level, you got Trump, you know, running around screaming about, you know, best stock market in the world, you know, best economy in the last 100 years. Da, 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 da. It's all nonsense. We had 4% in the last 12 months. The federal government has stopped.
stuffed a 4% fiscal deficit down the throat of the country.
Right.
Okay, and that's a fact. And so anything that's below that, if your wages went up 3, you're losing. You're not winning, you're losing.
Well, Carl, I honestly believe, and maybe on a small level, that if we, I'm not talking about getting rid of student loans or any of that kind of stuff, somehow dropping the interest rate from 6.5, some of these kids are paying dropping that down to 4.5, which since the interest rates around are like 0, even drop it to 5, dropping the credit card rates down to, let's say, 18 or 16, which are ridiculous on their own, at least they're better, 24 or 30, and raising the deduction for capital losses from $3,000 a year to like 100, I think you would actually get some trickle-up growth. Those are people that would that money would get spent instantly, and those people might actually say, "I'm going to start a business," or it might be
The capital loss change would be quite important. The other ones I don't like so much because the reason we have such a problem with college costs is because the government underwrote the loans and then made them exempt from bankruptcy protection. The way to solve that problem is reverse both those. Get the government out of it.
Right. Oh, I agree.
And repeal that law.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is you and I are on this exact same page that the solution is for the $70,000 college to be 35 where it ought to be.
Right.
But in the meantime, you have an awful lot of potential entrepreneurs and potential people that could give you some growth buried by this. And if you could help them out a little bit, I think somebody would stick their head up and do something.
Well, I think that the one place where, you and I think are in complete agreement is that if I've got to pay taxes on capital gains, then I should be able to deduct my capital losses.
Right. Well, yeah.
Okay, and I should be able to take them as a direct offset against income, period.
Heads you win, tails you lose if you're the government.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, if you think about that, people say, "Oh, you know, that's totally unfair." No, it's not. If I lost $1 million, I lost $1 million.
Yeah, well, I agree.
Okay, if I make $1 million next year, I shouldn't pay any taxes because of 1 million plus minus 1 million is zero.
Yeah, but if you lost $1 million first, you're never going to make $1 million.
Well, but you know what? At least this way, I can continue to.
Right.
Now if I start up a new business, I lost the money.
All right, Carl, we got a dash, buddy. Thank you very much for hanging, and we'll have you back soon. SP Futures now down 8, and as if you're down 33. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, "Sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays"?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.